If you've been a fan of Columbus music for any length of time, you might recognize that song as the music of Skrull. And we're joined in studio today on All Sides Weekend by Marcy Mays. She's a founding member of the band Skrull. And let's see, she's performed at the Reading Festival, All Tomorrow's Parties. She's toured with the likes of Afghan Whigs and Fugazi. And that's all in addition to other more entrepreneurial endeavors. And with all that going on, it's kind of hard to know where to start. But Marcy did bring an electric guitar in. This is our first electric guitar in studio. So since we spent so much time getting it set up.
I made everything difficult. I'm gonna.
We've got a lot of scotch tape holding things together.
We'll see how it goes.
So Marcy, thanks for being here. Do you want to?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Do you want to open the show with a song?
Yeah. It won't sound much like an electric guitar because I've got it turned down. But yeah, I'll play a verse, maybe in a chorus of one of my favorite Skrull rockers, and then we can talk.
Great.
All right. It's called Hunting Me Down. It is no accident I fell twice. You weren't far behind. You are hunting me down. It can't be circumstantial. Caught your eye. Caught a chill down my spine. You are hunting me down. Every time I feel trouble nearing, you cross my path. I know you are, I know you are, you're hunting me down. Hunting me down. Hunting me down.
Marcy Mays of Skrull, thanks so much for being here. That was awesome.
That was a very short version. I like that.
Yeah. So Skrull has been around for a while. Is Skrull still actively performing?
Yeah, we've never ever once broken up since 1986.
Since 1986.
We have never broken up.
So, yeah, let's just go ahead and start there. What were those early days like?
Oh, well, they were really a lot of fun. You know, Sue and I met over a love of music. She played in a band that played in Athens. I was going to school in Athens. And then we ended up playing together because, you know, things aligned and we got to open for a couple of shows in Columbus at that time. Stashes is where everybody wanted to play, and No Other and School Kids Records was kind of the one really driving the shows back then. We got to play at a couple of early shows. I guess people heard something in what we were doing. You know, we were slackers. We were not ambitious. We were not trying to do anything at all really new. We just wanted to play music that was kind of punk. But we also had weird country influence. I mean, like, it was kind of weird, but it was a blast. I mean, we played not as much as some bands do now. We were kind of lazy. We had jobs, you know.
Yeah.
We had to go drink beer. We had to go drink a lot of beer. We had things to do. But we did manage to, you know, be pushed practically by the community, some of them that were DJs at WOSR at the time, who said, will you guys please make a record? I mean, so they helped us. They gave us money. We made a record.
And yet
in 87.
You were on a number of labels. And
yeah,
you
after
worked...
that. Yeah, it just went so weird.
I saw that you were also on Elektra Records,
yeah.
Which, you know, that's a big deal. That's
it
a major recording
deal.
Label.
It was a big deal. That was at a time when we didn't know what our next step was going to be. We'd just been on a really great independent label called Simple Machines, and they had decided that they were going to pursue other things. It was two women from Washington, D.C., an amazing label, and we didn't know what to do next. We'd had really bad luck with indie labels until Simple Machines, and the opportunity to, you know, give Elektra a try presented itself, and despite advice from Steve Albini himself, we went ahead and signed the contract.
And Steve Albini,
I
guess he's known for producing the Pixies and Nirvana.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I've heard different opinions about label experience. I've talked to people with indie labels on major labels, and I've heard both sides of it. I mean, why why was the label, what did the label provide for you that you weren't already doing?
Well, I mean, we were slackers in the ultimate sense of the word. We were not going to, you know, promote ourselves. We could barely even hang flyers. I mean, we just, you know, we wanted to hang out and play music. We didn't want to do any of the worky stuff. I mean, and, you know, most bands that get really big or famous, there's someone, you know, how many people have you interviewed where there's somebody in the band going, I just have a lot of drive. This is my dream. This is what I want to do. Right. No one was like that in the band. No one.
Yeah.
It was like, you guys want to play on Friday? Okay. We liked writing songs, mm-hmm. and we liked playing live and hanging out. But it was never like, there was no career ambition ever. So for us, having a label was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to do it. That sounds cool. So it worked out great for us.
That's so funny to hear because, you know, I'm not from Columbus. And when I was in high school, I knew Skrull. And, you know, I even before I had plans of moving to Columbus and before I knew that, you know, I might cross paths with you someday, you know, I used to sit and listen to Skrull records. And yeah, my little 2-bit high school rock and roll band, we covered a song called I'm Not Stuck.
So crazy.
And I think we actually have a clip of
I want to hear it.
Yeah. That's the music of Skrull, and we're joined in studio by Marcy Mays. And yeah, that's not punky. I mean, you guys covered a lot of ground. I think that's one of the reasons why I liked it so much. Was a record was sort of you could hear all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we suffered as on a major label from lack of, you know, a genre. There's no doubt about it. But college radio was hugely supportive of us, and the fanzine culture was hugely supportive of Skrull. And that was our people. You know, that's kind of where we felt really comfortable, was in that indie layer. I mean, I think almost as soon as we signed with Elektra and we went and had the big lawyer meeting, we were like, yeah, bad move. This is not us. And we did okay. We got through it, you know. And we got to make a couple of records in amazing studios, and they actually sounded really good. I'm very proud of the records, but it was tough. It didn't feel like Skrull there for a little bit.
Are there any new songs in the works? Any new?
We have like 8 or 9 songs that we've never finished. I mean, there are even recordings that we've done, and some of them are almost finished. They've never been mixed and stuff. And since like 2001, we've been, you know, maybe we should. I'm telling you, we don't get stuff done very fast. Maybe we should like put those out. But we want to make another record because our drummer now is a guy named Jovan Karcic, and he's in another band called the Allwood Sisters, and he was in the band Gaunt, which was a huge Columbus band, as a guitar player. But he's a phenomenal, amazing, just sort of inspiring drummer to play with, and it's extremely exciting to get to play with him, so we really want to record again with him.
And
we'll see.
He also makes the best coffee.
And he makes great Yummy Too coffee, that's right.
So in addition to Skrull, what else do you have going on musically?
Musically, I'm in a band right now called Night Family that's just a bunch of Columbus people that have been in bands forever. Bob City, Econo Thugs, Skrull, and a couple of them play in different bands now. So it's like, it's hard rock. I mean, that's just what it is. It's hard. All I do is sing, which is really fun for me.
Is that maybe like a step from comfort? I've talked to a lot of people who, you know, said that something about playing the guitar also was a little bit of a shield.
It is. I've gotten used to it. It was really hard at first. Mm-hmm. You know, I got used to it. I sang a couple times, just sang a couple songs in front of large crowds. And it's a very different experience. I mean, I like it.
Does that change the songwriting process for you?
Yeah.
So in Skrull, the songs that you sing, you would obviously, you know, write the music for also.
Right.
So in Night Family, are they bringing in music for you to write to?
We kind of all work together, but they definitely come up with riffs. I mean, it's like hard rock, almost border. I just call it, you know, almost a little bit stoner metal at times. So it's very different. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to be me and write the type of lyrics and songs that I write and write for those songs because you want to fall into stereotypes. But yeah. We've worked really hard not to. So yeah. I really like what we've come up with, but it is hard not to have a guitar in your hand.
So, you know, one of the problems with this show is that, you know, we only get so much time to talk. So I've got a couple more things I want to bring up. So let's change gears a little here. You're also an owner or co-owner of two pretty fantastic establishments around town. Let's talk about Surly Girl first.
Okay.
Surly Girl is a bar restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. And a in the Garden District. I think it opened 7 years ago now. Gosh, that's so hard to believe. And yeah.
Do you have live music there also?
We did when we first started. And there's a tiny room in the back. I don't know if you've ever seen it or been back there. And we had a couple of shows. I can't think of Bob Starker's band right now. But Bob Starker played back there. Tim Lee Three, Cloud Cult. I think Allwood Sisters. So we had some shows back there, but like the capacity of the room literally is 30.
Yeah.
So, and then once the bar and restaurant got really busy, you know, there was a constant flow of yelling back to the kitchen, we need more, you know, jalapeno mashed potatoes. So they were trying to have these shows and there was a lot of scrambling. And I was like, you know, maybe my dream, you know, I don't know what we were thinking. Everything's bigger when you look at it before you open. Like this giant room in the back, we can have shows. Yeah. It was very tiny.
Then you put stuff
in. Yeah. So, yeah.
So even if it's not necessarily a music venue, I guess I've seen comedy there.
Yeah.
It seems to lend itself well to comedy.
Yes, it does. It's really good for that.
But it does give...
It's got the feel, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got the feel.
It's got a music feel. And I think that... a jukebox is really one of the things that can sort of define an establishment.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, who picks the music for your jukebox?
Well, now that is a controversial subject that has changed in the past couple of years. But we used to, you know, we used to talk, the bartenders and the owners would talk. I had ultimate say in the beginning. And it was quite ferocious at times
about
what we were going to put on and put off because we could only, we'd have like, I think 1,000 songs or something maybe, and then, you know, but then they made jukeboxes fancy so you could dial out and pay more and pull in a song from the internet, and I was like, oh no, we cannot have people bringing in songs that Marcy Mays doesn't want to hear.
That's right.
So I would get real mean about it, but yeah, it was a big deal, and it did define us because our most played song for 2 years was Teenage Riot by Sonic Youth, I mean, by far, which is an interesting thing for that bar, and we had a lot of Iggy Pop songs that were always in the top five. So yeah, it was fun.
And that's those are definitely $2 songs at
yes,
other jukeboxes.
Exactly. So
you're also the owner of Ace of Cups, and I suppose that's probably where I've seen more concerts this year than any other local club.
Glad to hear it. Yeah.
So Ace of Cups is North Campus, mm-hmm. and I believe it was a bank.
It was a bank. It was an I think it was originally a Northern Savings Bank, then Huntington bought it, and then it turned into a series of restaurant bars. And
I think my car was towed out of there once in one of its previous lives.
Amen to that. Everyone in Columbus has had that tow thing, but we don't tow anymore.
So one thing that I really like about Ace of Cups is, you know, you've got a lot of hardwood and some pretty high ceilings, and I don't know if that directly adds to the sound or maybe if you've just spent a lot of effort on the sound system, but bands sound really good.
Yeah, I worked with a couple of really amazing people to think about the stage and how it was going to be designed a lot before we, that was the single most important thing. Where's it going to be? What kind of equipment do we need? So, and like you said, we do have a high ceiling and a hardwood floor. So we had to find ways to make the sound controllable. So Nick Schold and Colin Oden and Billy Heingardner and Philip Park, a bunch of people all helped figure out what angle should the stage be?
Mm-hmm.
What materials are we going to use? And Jeff Plafkin. So yeah, a lot of thought went into that. That was my primary thing that I wanted to achieve was it better sound good to the crowd and it better sound good to the band that's playing on it.
All right. And what kind of acts are you bringing in?
We do a lot. Well, you know, we don't do hardly any cover bands. It's all usually original music. And we do a lot of post-punk, punk garage, a little bit of maybe other Americana folky genres, not as much. It's pretty rock. I mean, we do a lot of metal. We have a promoter who brings in a lot of metal shows like Skeleton Witch and Fu Manchu. And then we've got No Bunny coming up, and we've had Paul Collins. I mean, we've had some amazing stuff there, and Benko does some shows there. So, yeah, we've got a great variety, but it's pretty firmly in the rock.
Cool. Has I guess, running a venue, has it changed your listening habits? Are you burned out on live music?
No. That I love to hear bands. And it's funny, like, I can hear a band, and I can watch their YouTube, but... You know, everything changes when you see them live, and they either draw you in or you find that you aren't as drawn in as you wish you'd been. And I really love seeing bands. I wish I could see more. I have a day job, so I do my day job. And then, by 10:30, I'm like, I got to go home, you guys. I'm so tired. And all the fun's kind of just starting. So I miss a lot of the fun, but I do manage to see some of the bands I want to see. So
cool.
It's awesome.
So I understand you're in the preliminary stages of an outdoor festival.
We might try to do it this year. We've cool. talked about it. Got a couple people I'm talking to, but we're thinking, you know, we might just go right for the throat and do it in the heat of August. You know, hottest day of the year kind of festival.
That's
what we're shooting for.
The best time to see a festival. Well, I think our time is about up. I've been joined for this segment by Marcy Mays. She's an entrepreneur as well as a musician here in Columbus. And we'll be right back. This is All Sides Weekend with Eric French. Marcy, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Eric. I like your show. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you. That's the new hit single from Angela Purley. Angela Purley is a Columbus native singer-songwriter. She's a performer, multi-instrumentalist, and she's recently released a new album and a new video, and she's braved the polar vortex to be here with us today. So, Angela, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, your album came out last Friday.
Yes.
And is this your first album?
Yes, this is the first full-length record. So, and we had our CD release party on Friday, and then on iTunes and Amazon, all the digital places, was the 21st, so Tuesday.
So it's a little staggered.
Yeah.
So how is this CD, how is this unique from other musical projects you've been involved in?
We've recorded as a band like 4 EPs so far, mm-hmm. and this is definitely the most... work, the biggest team we've had ever recording it, yet it's maybe the rawest recording because we did a lot of live drum tracks and guitar tracks. But it's more of a package. Like all of our EPs kind of had a theme and they were tied together, but I feel like this one is like the most cohesive project that I've done so far.
All right. Well, the sound is fantastic. Where did you do it?
we did it at Vital Music Studios. So it's in Grandview. It's Vital Companies. They have a film company too, so they do our videos. But Fred Blitzer, he has a studio. So we did a lot of tracking at his studio. And then Mike Landot was also one of the engineers and producers, and Jerry DePizzo as well. So we did a little bit of tracking over at Mike's studio too. But they're in the same building, which is nice.
So, you know what? Most of the records that I've been hearing lately that sound fantastic, everybody says, you know, came out of that same block.
Yeah, they're amazing. It's very professional, and they just, as far as like the technical aspect goes of recording, they really know what they're doing. So, it really helped the record.
Are there any songs that you're maybe particularly happy with?
Ooh, I love like Bad Reputation and Rolling Over. I really love how those came out. It just we didn't really spend that much time on them, and it wasn't really overthought or anything. But I love Athens. I really love how that turned out.
That's funny that you mentioned Athens. It's one of the ones that we have here. You know, what I like the most about Athens is, and maybe it's just that it's the wintertime, but it's kind of dark and weird. You know, hurricane's a little bit dark too, but it's kind of upbeat. let's hear a little bit of Athens.
Running around in our hall with familiar faces I used to know. Try to get high. There's the clouds. Midwest kids with Midwest charm. Jumping fences, breaking arms. Laughing like the good times will never stop.
That's the song Athens. It's on Angela Purley's new record. Did you go to school there?
I did.
Wow. So two guests today, and they've both been students.
It's pretty crazy.
So, excuse me. I see that you also brought a guitar.
I did.
What about, you know, I know a lot of artists that, you know, perform with a full band also perform solo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you often have to change your arrangements to perform solo?
Definitely. I mean, I'm a very simple guitar player, so it automatically sounds like field recording mm-hmm. as soon as I start playing, because I play very simple chords and stuff. So, yeah, it changes. If we have the full band, it's a whole different dynamic and arrangement, because there's, you know, more instruments involved. Same if we strip down our band to, like, an acoustic trio or acoustic duo, and it just keeps changing each step kind of down you take. So solo is, like, completely different.
Do you want to play something for us?
Yeah, I'll play a little bit of Rock and Roller. This is kind of a pretty stripped down song, and it's also on the new record.
Great.
So,
and we'll have we'll post on the website where our listeners can find the record.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay, so this is a little bit of Rock and Roller.
He's got me on the ground. Oh, he's got me on the ground. And my heart, he just pounds. Oh, he's got me on the ground. That little heart, maybe. That little heart, maybe, keeps on staying in me. That little heart, maybe, he's got me where he wants me, got me where he wants me right now. He's a rock and roller, shaking, shaking, shaking me out.
A little taste of it.
All right. That's Angela Purley on All Sides Weekend. And for those of you listening on the radio, you couldn't see, but the guitar that you were playing was pretty unique. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I actually got this guitar in Athens at the Blue Eagle Music Shop. And it was by a guitar maker, luthier, Al Rorick. And he's made maybe a handful of guitars. And this is a resonator guitar. And some people call it Dobro, because that was like a brand name. So you can use it to play slide. But I have it set down to just kind of play a normal guitar. But it gives it kind of a twangy, it has an offbeat sound, which I really like.
Yeah, I've seen you perform a number of times now on so many different instruments.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your musical background? How did you become proficient at so many different instruments?
When I was young, I did like the fourth grade, fifth grade, like piano lessons and violin lessons. So that was kind of my gateway into music. And then in high school, I kind of picked up guitar, was learning some basic chords. And then I've just kind of learned to play with other musicians since then. And I've kept it pretty simple on guitar still. But I think just having some music lessons in the past, just with mm-hmm. piano and stuff, that really helps kind of cross over into a lot of different instruments.
And one of those instruments is pretty unique. Angela has brought a saw, literally a saw, to the studio.
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk about the saw.
So this saw, it basically, I mean, it is from a musical saw company, but it's a normal saw. Like, you could pick up a regular handsaw at your hardware store and play it.
Yeah, we can work on the studios. We can saw some boards after this.
I mean, you guys can do a lot of work with this, too, so...
So how does one play a saw?
So it is all about the angle. You kind of create an S shape with your whatever hand you're going with. Your bowing hand is normally with your playing hand, mm-hmm. which is weird for me because on guitar I'm a normal right-handed guitar player, but I write with my left hand. So for some reason on saw it crosses over and I play saw with my left hand. But basically you just you bend the bow into an S shape, and then you're just kind of, you try to find that right angle to make a tone, and you just slide into notes. So I'll give you an example.
Wow. Well, that's like an acoustic theremin, I suppose.
It really is.
So, I mean, when you play live, how do you explain to a sound guy what you've got going on there?
Sometimes they're a little confused, but I think there's enough. There's maybe it's not as common as usual, but there are saw players around. So usually a sound guy has had an experience, one time or another with a saw player in a band, usually more like kind of jug band kind of stuff. So, usually they're a little confused, but then it always works out. It's pretty easy. We just set up like an instrument mic for it, just like it's a hand drum or something, like a percussion instrument. So,
your band is called the Howlin' Moons, Angela Perley and the Howlin' Moons, which is a
yes.
great band name, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And it's Howlin', right? Not with a G.
Right, Howlin'. Okay. So, tricks people up, a little apostrophe there.
Do you consider yourself a solo artist with a band, or is this a band kind of like a band of friends?
It's a band of friends. How I met the guys in the beginning, it was like kind of a solo thing, and then we had, different musicians that the label was trying to kind of like pair me up with. But just now, we've played together since 2009, the core, Billy Zane on bass, Chris Connor on guitar, Steve Rupp on drums. We've had Steve in the band for the last 3 years, and it's made it very solid. And I consider it, especially just playing now, it's the band sound. It's like I can't create those sounds just by myself. It's a completely different thing if I'm solo. So,
right.
Yeah, I love playing with them.
Do you write by yourself? Do you write as a band?
I do. I still am writing by myself. It seems very, something safe. I haven't really written with anyone else yet. But I've done a lot of I'll write a song on guitar and I'll bring it in to the guys. And we've done a lot more experimental things where maybe I'll just have a vocal. There's a couple songs now where I'm not even playing guitar. I'm just singing like Hurricane. Which is kind of freeing and scary at the same time because you don't have, something to hold
right.
on to. But that's when really it becomes the band sound because they're just we just bounce ideas off of each other and creating it kind of from the ground up, which is cool.
I saw on your website you have a pretty full schedule.
Yeah.
Do you have plans to hit the road?
Yeah.
Now that you have the record out?
We're hoping to. I mean, I'm still doing booking for the band right now, so we don't have like a booking agent that can really get us, touring is really hard, and so we do it really grassroots, and we go to New York and Chicago and Knoxville, Tennessee a lot, and Lexington, Kentucky, we're going there next weekend, and so we do a lot of like 5-hour radio shows and a couple long stints, but yeah, we're hoping to kind of get some longer tours going once the winter breaks, like
a little. Yeah, this isn't great touring weather, is it?
Right.
Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left. Would you be interested in playing another song for us?
Sure, definitely.
All right. So what do you have in mind here?
Trying to think. Well, maybe since we're talking about the band, I'll do a little Howlin' at the Moon song.
Yeah, sounds good. We're joined with in studio by Angela Purley of Angela Purley and the Howlin' Moons, and this is All Sides Weekend. And take it away.
Thanks.
Well, I'm hollering, I'm hollering at the moon. Well, I'm hollering, I'm hollering at the moon. I'm a wolf, little boy. Grand prize is set on you. Straight keel for you. Well, I'm hollering, I'm hollering at the moon. I'm hollering, I'm hollering at the moon. I'm a wolf, little boy. Grand prize is set on you.
That's Angela Purley on All Sides Weekend. Angela, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you so much for having
me.
Yeah,
this was great. Well, we're about out of time, but stay with us. We have one more guest coming up after this break. We'll be joined by Philip Fox. This is All Sides Weekend with Eric French, and we'll be right back.
Come on, baby, give me something real. Show me how you really feel.
Just the wind and snow, life poured in with the rain.
That is the music of Philip Fox, and I've been talking this guy up for a while on the show, so it's good to finally have you here.
Thanks for having me, man. Yeah, I've been excited about it.
So, Philip Fox, you're a Columbus-based country rock Americana artist, and you front the Philip Fox band. I find your music is kind of hard to pin down.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like every band now wants to say that, you know, you can't define my music. And
yeah.
At the end of the day, I mean, there's some country, there's some rock, there's some southern rock. It's, I don't know. I mean, it's got a rural kind of rustic vibe. It's not urban, you know, kind of the way Tom Petty was with rock and roll. You know, it's...
Yeah. So did you grow up listening to music like this?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think the first record my dad ever spun, I remember it distinctly because there was this point, I was like 12 and we'd moved from Detroit out to the country and my dad finally had a space to set up his stereo and he had this awesome Swedish turntable that it, like back in the day when there weren't buttons, it just worked off electrostatic from your fingers.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy, you know? And he pulled out his record collection and the first disc he spun was Desperado. And
it was, cool.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I was raised on that kind of stuff.
Is this the kind of music that you've always played? Did you have like maybe a high school punk band phase or anything?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, I came of age, you know, at the height of grunge. So,
yeah,
so Nirvana, Pumpkins, you know. I think the first band I was in, we called emo, you know, back when no one knew what that was, you know. So, yeah, I definitely went through that phase.
I see that you also, and I've seen you perform live, and I know that you play a lot of original music, but you also play a lot of covers.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of do it unapologetically too. I mean, I don't mean to imply anything there, but you know, a lot of artists, you know, pursue their own music. And how do the cover songs fit into your sets?
That's a great question. I mean, honestly, it's sort of just been out of necessity. I mean, that and I guess I went through my, you know, I'm only going to play my music, you know, come hell or high water phase back in high school. You know, I mean, I was in a band. We played in 3-4 state radius and was in a van every weekend. And, you know, that's before I even graduated. So, you know, as I've moved on, I've realized, well, there's different things I want out of life. And there are other people that have actually really interesting things to say as well. I'm not the only one. And, hey, if we can go to a bar and, you know, pack it full of people and we can play the whole night and I can actually pay my guys, you know, and keep the same guys playing with me for 200 shows straight, like, there's a benefit to that. Yeah. So, you know, so we sat down. It was about, I don't know, maybe 6 months after we started Philip Fox Band, and we were like, let's learn some other people's tunes. And the added benefit of that that was sort of unintentional is that my songwriting has gotten a lot better because I'm dissecting other people's music, you know, to learn it. And especially like some of those old Eagles tunes, man. I mean, I was having to learn chords to play those songs, you know. And it's definitely helped my songwriting immensely to be able to, you know, see what somebody else did and realize that that works.
What is your approach to songwriting?
I get asked that question all the time, and I can't say that there's really one, like, I have a method. You know, people think there's like, oh, there's a way you do it. Like, you sit down and there's step 1 through 5. And I mean, I've written songs off of just having a melody in my head. I've written songs off of lyrics. I've had a guitar riff and come. I mean, I've had guys in the band bring something and we write a song out of it. I think if you're like a pure songwriter, you just have a way to, you have the ability to look at different pieces of, different elements of the song and sort of carve a path and, you know, sort of fearlessly go down that route and throw a bunch of stuff away along the way if you need to. But yeah, I mean, there's not a process. It's just, you sit down and grind it out, you know.
One of my favorite songs is kind of a, you know, it's got a steel guitar in it. It's kind of a slower country ballad. It's called Sleep, I'll Comfort You. Let's play a clip of that. So this brings up, wow, so many more things I want to talk about. Let's talk about your voice.
Okay.
Let's talk about that vocal technique. You sound so much different singing than you sound talking.
I get that all the time. In fact, I had we're going to do some shows with the band in West Virginia later this year. And the lead singer and I were talking on the phone the other night, and he said, so you don't talk like you sing, but you look like you sing. And so I guess it's fine. But yeah, it's a mind trip for people when I step off the stage and like meet them after the show and they're like, wow, you know, is it really the same guy?
When you play, how are you playing? One set? Are you playing all night?
The bread and butter of our shows is we do 2 sets in 4 hours. So we go out and do a 2-hour set and then take like a 20-minute break and then.
And how many shows a year do you play?
We did 175 last year.
That's a lot.
Yes.
What toll does that have on your voice?
You know, part of me developing my voice was I wanted to be able to sing when I'm like 60, you know? And so I read the horror stories about guys that have polyps and have to get vocal surgery and stuff. So I spent a lot of time learning to sing properly, but still forcing my voice into the direction I wanted it to sound like. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even though it sounds like I should be singing totally wrong, but I'm actually, there's a lot of technique involved with it. And I mean, we've done 14, 15 shows in 10 days, and, you know, my voice is still as strong at the end as it is at the beginning.
Wow. We have another one here queued up. This one crosses, you know, over into what I would maybe think more of like a pop country song. This song's called One Step Behind.
Yeah.
Just waited in a line, but I came out on a Wednesday morning. I was one step behind.
I'm not a huge fan of pop country, but I love that song. What's different about this?
Well, that song is more Mellencamp than Luke Bryan, you know? And that's the thing is, like, even though Mellencamp got so overplayed and it's kind of like a, you know, Walmart band sort of mentality, at least in a lot of people's minds, like, oh, Mellencamp. It's like, who doesn't like Mellencamp, you know, at the end of the day?
And his latest records have been pretty good.
Yep.
I mean, they don't have hits, but they're solid records.
Exactly.
You brought your guitar. Let's hear something.
Sure. Well, you played a bunch of the tunes off the last EP, so how about I do one from the new record?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Actually, I should ask, are there certain words I'm not allowed to say on the radio?
There are.
Okay. Is the D word one of those?
Donut? I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you're okay.
Okay, all right, here we go. This song is a response. Growing up in Detroit, I listened to a lot of Bob Seger,
okay,
growing up. And that song, Turn the Page, always just never sat with me right. So this is my response to that. It's called Writing a New Damn Book.
There's no end to all of those who give advice and those who fail. Warn you about the sacrifice, but I survived a 40-hour life, and I wouldn't trade a thing. Jump in the truck, come on, let's drive. We've waited long enough. This could be our time. Don't be afraid of what we'll find. Gonna give it a healthy look. We ain't turning the page, boys. We're writing a new damn book.
That's Philip Fox. He's here with us in studio on All Sides Weekend. Philip, yeah, we've played a couple songs off of your last EP, mm-hmm. And I understand that you're working on a brand new record?
Yes, I've been working on it, man, like every day off we've had since November. It's a lot of days.
Is this going to be a full length?
It is, yeah. We did pre-production on 20 songs, and we're doing full production on 14, and we'll see how that gets pared down once we get through the mixing process, which will be in a couple weeks here.
And then when the record's done, more playing, more touring?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this record we're going to release in a very different way than we did the last one. It's really easy to just sort of casually release a record and be like, hey, have a CD release party, and then, like, not a lot changes. So we're going to be working with a national PR company for this next record to really push it out, as well as a radio promotion company that will do one or two songs that we'll be pitching to radio in certain geographies. So there'll be radio tours and, you know, just all kinds of different stuff going on after the release of this record than what's been happening, you know, for the last 3 years of the band.
You have a pretty strong online presence. I noticed recently that you released a promo video.
Yes. Yeah, shot that at the Bluestone on Black Friday. The venue is just gorgeous. And we had Nathan William come in and do the video. He does a lot of music videos. And I mean, yeah, we've gotten a lot of good response from that so far.
What do you consider success as a songwriter?
Ooh, as a songwriter.
Are you looking for the crowd's reaction? Are you looking internally?
You know, I mean, I think it's got to be a balance of both. I mean, you don't want to, as a songwriter, if you write a song that resonates with people, you're going to have to sing it for the rest of your life. And I'd hate to write a song that I, you know, wouldn't be able to stand singing, you know, for the rest of my life. So there's that sort of internal honesty. But at the same time, you know, if I only wanted to write songs for myself, I wouldn't be taking all this time to perform and to record and all that stuff. So I definitely want, you know, there's something very satisfying about having a song resonate with somebody, either lyrically or musically, where it gets stuck in their mind and becomes sort of a part of their, you know, their mental web, which is kind of a very humbling thing when you really stop and think about it.
I've noticed that in a lot of your songs, you're more of a storyteller than maybe like a personal experience type of writer. Do you have any outlets? Do you write otherwise, other than songs?
I wish. I wish I had time to, you know? But, I mean, at this point, it's just finding the time to songwrite is challenging enough.
So speaking of time, I do know that your family has expanded recently.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I have a 5-month-old at home.
And how do you strike the balance between music life, home life?
Well, it helps that I have a very, very understanding wife who's super supportive. And it helps that I'm able to do music full time. So I don't have another job. So, you know, I've watched my son during the day, and then we just have a network of sitters. And actually, Jonathan, my bass player, came over and is watching him right now so I could come do this. So it's kind of catch as catch can. I mean, kids change really rapidly in the first few months of life, and so there's not really any rhythm. It's just like chaos all the time.
You mentioned your bass player. The first time I saw you play live, it was just the two of you performing acoustic.
Okay.
And he plays upright bass also.
Yes.
And I was just blown away. It was like rhythm guitar and lead bass.
Yes. Well, he's actually a classically trained cellist.
Oh, wow.
He has a performance degree in that. Yeah, so he brings a very different approach to the upright bass, very learned. And the other benefit of that is for the record, I mean, like the strings you heard on Sleep I'll Comfort You, he wrote and arranged and performed the cello part of that, and then we brought in people from the CSO to play the other parts. We have a lot more string arrangements and some horn sections and stuff on the new record. So yeah, he's a huge, huge musical asset to the group.
Oh, that's a great resource to have in house.
Absolutely.
And you know what? That first concert, I actually had my video camera that night, and I took some video, and I was digging through all my hard drives last night to try to find it, and unfortunately, I couldn't. So maybe one of these days, I'll post it online.
Yeah, definitely, it'll pop up. It'll be one of those hidden things.
This is All Sides Weekend with Eric French. This is our local music program, where once a month or so we'll take a look into the Columbus music scene. And we're joined in studio right now by Philip Fox. And Philip, we're just about out of time, but I just wanted to say thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
And big thanks to Marcy Mays and Angela Purley also. And a big thank you for Ann Fisher and her staff for all their support with this program. And our indispensable producer, Amy Jurevich. This is All Sides Weekend with Eric French. We'll be back next month.
Blood. Son of an auto man who worked out for a fool. And I held my daddy's hand as he took me on the line. And I met the men who sweated, made that city side keep dying. Who years when I would and things got bad. Out of my daddy's dreams, shut down.